Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So yesterday, an alert observer in Western Springs sent me this photo of preschoolers queued up going over to the playground at Grand Avenue School in Western Springs. This is a private non-denominational school. It's 93 degrees out. And these preschoolers are all wearing masks outside. It turns out that there was a letter sent to parents, because I was wondering if these kids had parents, honestly, when I saw this picture. Turns out there was a letter sent from the powers that be at the Grand Avenue School in Western Springs to parents over the weekend. Dear Grand Avenue families, starting tomorrow, Monday, May 9th, I'm requiring masks for all students, staff, and parents entering the building until further notice. I now have three staff plus myself out with COVID, not to mention Kamala Harris. I have three more classrooms closed tomorrow through Wednesday. Almost every week I'm reporting COVID. In order to keep from having to close the entire center, I'm choosing to be proactive because masking does seem to help the spread of germs, COVID or otherwise. Not really. We have a few weeks of preschool left involving mostly unvaccinated children. And I know the pre-K families would like to see their children graduate. We have a grand finale wrap-up soon, and then, of course, summer. To be clear, this is not required by CDC or CCPH, Cook County Public Health, or DCFS. This is my call for all the students. My call for all ages in an attempt to protect the staff and the children if I can, so we can finish out the school year without interruption. So please cooperate and let's get through this together as best we can. Thank you, Mary, whoever Mary is. Apparently she's in charge at Grand Avenue School in Western Springs.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Oh, yeah, I pulled my car over yesterday when I saw the chain of kids, you know, from the daycare center nearby walking outside. All of a sudden, all of them have masks on again. Why? They're walking outside. It's 93 plus degrees with a heat index. So people have lost their minds. Yes, there's a bump in cases right now. We knew this was going to happen. But hospitalizations are excellent. The death rate in Chicago is not even one death a day.
Who is paying attention to these?
It's a cold. Well, right now it's a cold.
So how does this work exactly? Because there have to be some folks who have kids in schools like this. How does this work where the parents are actually notified, so it's not like the school is going behind the backs of the parents.
Right.
And the entire parental community for preschool kids at this Grand Avenue School in Western Springs or any other school where this is happening, how do they go along with this now? What is that dynamic? I'm curious. What actually is that dynamic? No. And so every single parent at Grand Avenue School has the same opinion about masking and COVID policy generally. That's what you're telling me?
Well, it's child abuse. I mean, wake the hell up, people.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know. Are they afraid they're going to kick out? Is this some prestigious preschool that I don't know about? I mean, why would they comply?
Well, it's private.
And do that to their children?
It's a private school.
Or do they know that their kids are being masked at recess while they're outside when it's 93 degrees?
She sent the letter over the weekend to parents. I mean, unless they didn't read the letter collectively. That doesn't seem probable. What is the dynamic in a situation like this? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Is it sort of a Stalinist environment? You don't want to be the first one to stop clapping? Is that it? Ron in Salem, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Whatever happened to washing your hands? No one says nothing about washing your hands. It's all this diaper on your face stuff.
Yeah.
Wash your hands. That spread, slow the spread real easy. Wash your hands.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Get that finger out of your ear because you don't know where that finger's been. Absolutely. Craig Mount Greenwood.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and thank you for taking my call. A couple things at play here. The media's done a super job of keeping parents and adult and people just in general stupid and in the dark and no telling thing. Whatever happened to the science? All of a sudden, it ain't the science anymore because the science shows the masks basically don't do a thing, and the shots are very dangerous, you know?
Well, yeah, okay, but thanks, Greg.
Bigger question.
But I want to understand what's happening here at this point, where we are now, and outside. And, I mean, to Mary over at Grand Avenue School's credit, this is not required by CDC, not required by CCPH, not required by DCFS. I'm doing it. I'm making the call to put masks on preschoolers.
While they're outside.
Yeah, and then the additional layer of, right, while they're outside. And
the sweaty bacteria-filled masks. Yeah.
And then the parents go along with this because they're notified. So it's
maybe they're worried about getting kicked out of the private school. I can't think of any other reason why this, you know, lunacy continues.
And why would they be worried about being kicked out of that school?
Maybe it's a prestigious school. It's something to talk about at a cocktail party. I don't know.
So the status is greater than the interest in their kids' health.
Yeah, a lot of selfish parents out there. Yeah.
Mary Kay, Western.
Stupid parents.
Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Yeah, you want to hear the deal? Grand Avenue used to be known back in the old days as the smart preschool. And the other one around here was not. Yeah, whatever that is. What a joke. And they said that in the interview when I went over there. Then the other schools around here are known kind of, you know, they're all prestigious, guys. You know, we live in the suburbs. So.
Oh, yeah,
you know.
Very prestigious.
Oh, very.
Yeah,
so
very shishi.
The park there. Yeah. Yes. You know, for 2 years, because your kid's going to be there for third, three, and four age. I mean, it's not prestigious, Amy. It's 2 years, and then you move on to the.
So what's the deal there?
What's the deal there? The parents are stupid, some of them. The rest of them are outside complaining and keeping their kids up with no masks on. It's the end of the year. What do we have? I don't know. They have 2 weeks left. Some of them are like, just whatever. You know, let's just get out of here and get through
it. It's just 2 weeks, right?
It's just 2 weeks. It's just 2 weeks to finish the year.
It's 2 weeks.
Yeah. It is. But, you know, I watch the little kids with their masks, and I kind of wink at them and say, you know, take that thing. You don't have to wear that out here. We're out playing in, like, the play lot, you know. It's like I'm sitting there with my friends, and we're I don't get it. It's silly.
Western Springs parents, you've been warned to keep your kids away from Mary Kay.
Yeah. Watch out, I'll be over there today. Oops.
Right. Hey, you,
thanks,
come
Mary
here.
Kay.
What, did you have candy? No, I want you to take your mask off.
Jim in Crown Point.
I equate this to the Munchausen syndrome. Parents over-medicating their children. They can't help themselves. They have to. They're always tinkering. I went to my grandson's track meet. Some of the kids are competing with masks on.
Yeah, I know.
And the dashes. I mean, and now I think it's a status thing with a lot of people. They walk around with this mask on, like, signifying something, which I do not know.
Yeah, those
the kids that I know that wear them because they have, or think that they have bad teeth or they have acne and they think they look better with the mask on.
So there's some of that, but here's the thing. If it was all being done voluntarily by choice, then Mary over at Grand Avenue School wouldn't have had to issue this letter and make this order. So there's some people who are not doing it by choice who then fold in, even at this point, even with preschoolers, even outside. And that's the cohort I'm interested in crawling inside the mind of, sort of. Patti LuPone is a Broadway star.
Of course, with a name like Patti LuPone.
You may have seen her if you're not a fan of Broadway, and particularly in New York. She has performed here. What did I see her in? I saw her in something here back when I was allowed in the theaters in Chicago a long time ago. She was part of a little post-show chat with the audience, the cast, and apparently some lady, because, by the way, that's the protocol in Chicago as well. New York, you got to wear a mask to go to a Broadway show.
Right.
And some lady.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. Don't tell me.
Didn't have the mask above her nose. Uh-oh. And Patti LuPone, who, by the way, you may recall she made headlines several years back when she stopped a performance in the middle of the performance to excoriate a guy who was on his cell phone that she saw from the stage.
That's okay. That woman.
So she's not afraid to mix it up. And she certainly wasn't in this instance either.
Push your mask over your nose. That's why you're in the theater. That is the rule. If you don't want to follow the rule, get the f*** out. Who do you think you are that you do not respect the people that are sitting around you?
Pay your salary.
You pay your salary. Chris Harper pays my salary. Who do you think you are?
Come on, Chris.
Just put your mask over your nose. We have worked really hard.
We've worked so hard. And by the way, of course, Patti LuPone and the cast members on stage not wearing masks. The applause.
That's the thing that bothered me.
Yeah. The people applauding, the people complying at Grand Avenue School in Western Springs. That's who I want to think about. That's who I want to understand. Because the Patti LuPones, the COVIDians, I mean, they're gone. They'll come back, if ever, on their own schedule. Mm-hmm. Can't worry about them. But those that are non-compliant, but then compliant, that's an interesting cohort.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I remembered what I saw Patti LuPone in Chicago.
All right, what was it?
Mike and I were talking about it over the break because we're men of letters.
Okay, yes.
He mentioned Sweeney Todd, and she wasn't that, but that's not what I saw her in. Starting war paint at the Goodman. This has to be
long ago.
7-8 years ago, maybe.
Wow.
Wait, war paint. It was about Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein.
Okay.
Cosmetics industry. And you've probably seen her. You've seen her in episodes of Law and Order. She was in Mike Scott. I never watched
Google
the series,
right,
but she was in a television series too that I'm forgetting. We were just talking about it. I didn't watch it. He did. But anyway, and she's a beautiful singing voice, but she's a Harridan. As you know, there's a lot of talented people that are terrible people.
Sounded like a dictator. And I'm like,
no.
You know, you're trying to kill me, mm-hmm. But yet she and the cast don't have masks on.
Well,
they're yelling at people who they think are improperly wearing them.
So we had a visit from the big guy yesterday. He did his best Zsa Zsa Gabor and went down on the farm, Kankakee, and he came back to speak in Chicago. And Governor Jellybelly was busy playing with the vacuum down at some abortion mill in East St. Louis.
How ghoulish was that? But Dan,
big day for pro-abort Democrat socialists in Illinois.
But Dan, at least they had their masks on. Because if it saves one life, I mean, I know somebody who's a Democrat who got an abortion who was just appalled because I tweeted out that, you know, they're going to have this press conference in an abortion clinic in a patient recovery room is nothing sacred anymore. And she was appalled.
There's nothing sacred in a Planned Parenthood mill, I'll tell you that.
Well, but I mean, she got an abortion, okay? She's not celebrating it. She's not out there wearing it. It was very painful for her and very hard for her. And she thought, and now the politicians are in that room too, promoting their ghoulish agenda. And taking it one step further, because, Dan, it's not going to stop with abortion. Like, they're going after, you know, marriage equality. I'll play the bite. Hold on. Oh, too bad I can't play my sound bites. Maybe Justin, can you play JB5, please? Justin. Oh, well, that didn't happen.
Okay. Well, yeah, I understand that. But just on the abortion issue itself for a minute, because we had, you know, the expected outcome yesterday of Pagliacci's beating of the lectern for the last 10 days, codifying Roe v. Wade into federal statute, making the right to abortion statutory law. Well, that didn't go anywhere. Failed in the Senate, 49-51. Joe Manchin flipped and voted with Republicans, not because he's not pro-abortion, because he is, but because he recognizes that this isn't codifying Roe, this is an expansion of Roe, and that's, of course, what it is. I think a lot of people don't have any clue how radical the pro-abort types are, because it's all couched in pro-choice and women's rights and reproductive health and so on and so forth. I don't think they have any idea how far afield the pro-aborts are in places like this island, as a man who is an island, Jelly Belly, calls Illinois. Abortion all 9 months, taxpayer funded.
That's the thing, though. All 9 months. Here, this is Jelly Belly.
This decision will not just take away people's reproductive rights. It also threatens their right to birth control. Okay. It also threatens their right to marriage equality. It also threatens all of the precedents that have been established around the privacy rights that were codified in Roe v. Wade.
Is that their new warrior cry? That now marriage equality is going to be in danger?
I mean, this is what...
Birth control.
This is not an independent thinker. This is not a intellectual leader of the left. This is the reciter of talking points, you understand, Jelly Belly. So you've been hearing that talking point for a week, and now he's picked it up per his presser at this abortion mill. That's all. Nobody is paying attention to him. Nobody is looking for him to him for guidance. They're looking for him to do what he does, which is be a dutiful reciter of talking points. This is somebody who believes nothing. His interest was in public office. Don't you remember the tapes between Blagojevich and Pritzker? I'll take anything, any office. Attorney General? Sure. What do you got? Senate? I like the Senate. I'll take Attorney General. Secretary of State? Maybe. He is an empty shell of a human being, as so many of the politicians in this political ruling class, the state's political ruling class, are.
And
as so many
job.
Of the pro-aborts are. Soulless. The New Republic this week. they cannot be serious. They're incapable of being serious. There's no point in conversation. You almost have to talk in silos because they won't say what the New Republic put in print to your face. They won't stand side by side and debate the issue. I was talking about this with a friend of mine the other day. You know, I was looking online for like debates on abortion because I hadn't thought that much about it and so on and so forth. And I can't find any. I'm like, yeah, I'm not surprised, because there's very little debating that goes on anymore. It's not that long ago, back when I was in college, you had a national tour. Phyllis Schlafly versus Sarah Weddington. The college campus to college campus, where obviously Schlafly would argue pro-choice and Sarah Weddington, lawyer for the abortion industry, would argue for abortion. And the college campus to college campus, where issues, where ideas were presented side by side, where views were explicated side by side in front of college students. Where does that happen anymore on any topic? But since we're talking about abortion, New Republic, the GOP are the proverbial dog that caught the car. For decades, they've been working their voters, into frothing hysteria over the need to protect the unborn from abortionists. But what this means in practice, prosecuting women who have miscarriages. What? Mm-hmm. Deaths from ectopic pregnancies, a precipitous rise in America's already abysmal childbirth mortality rates. That's far less appealing. And so the argument is, you know, Republicans are overreaching by New Republic. It's a left-wing rank. Prosecuting women who have miscarriages. Has anyone
ever suggested that?
Ever said that?
No.
No. Does it matter to the pro-abort left? Does it matter to the left in general, the matter, the issue of accuracy, a fair presentation of your political opponent's argument? No, it doesn't. So I don't know where anybody thinks we're going with this. But it's time to vote your shares. That's what you can do. Vote your shares. Vote your shares in terms of those with a particular originalist understanding of the Constitution, the correct one. Vote your shares in locale to locale and state to state around the country. And at some point, if more people want to fairly represent the argument of their political opponent, which I do, then you can have a discussion. If you don't, then you're not going to see these issues debated on college campuses in an intelligent way, in a provocative way, but an intelligent way. You're not going to have anything but power politics, voting your shares. And hopefully those who are voting their shares, you know, those who have the majority of the shares to vote, as it were, will exercise restraint consistent with constitutional principles, as both sides have trouble doing from time to time.
Well, there's a story out on NBC News that says, you know, they're worried that with your cell phone, they're going to track you if you go to a different state and get an abortion and prosecute you. Did anybody ever say that?
Yeah.
Is that on the table? No, it's not. It's just a ridiculous left.
Everything is the moral panic. Everything is apocalyptic. Everything is, they're going to put you all back in chains.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Biden to Mitt Romney, of all people, right? But that's what they do. That's what I say. Where do you go with somebody who behaves like this, who discusses issues like the Illuminati on the staff of the New Republic? Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Hello, Danny. Well, I hate Pritzker, but I feel for him on this one. And I do, I think he's still hearing those cries from his mother from when her vaginal rips.
Okay. Dennis.
What is wrong?
Not helpful.
Was he on something? Maybe he's just getting home from the bars?
Leo, Wicker Park.
Yeah, hi. My brother has a daughter in school in Texas, and she's concerned if one of her roommates gets pregnant, what should they do? And I've told my brother to be very careful, because if he advises or sends her to somebody to advise her to have an abortion, they could be prosecuted. And then if they do it themselves, according to him, they're looking online how to do it in their dorm room. And I told them that they could again be prosecuted for, I don't know what the crime would be. You know, it could be, because it's a life, it could be considered murder. You know, if you could advise me as to what would be the prosecution for, not for the doctors that do it, but for the people who submit themselves to abortions.
Well, first of all, suggesting that somebody get an abortion is not a criminal offense in Texas or anywhere else. So you should stop advising anybody. That's number one, because you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, it is a crime if you give them advice on how to get one done.
No, it's not.
There's a $10,000 reward for turning people in.
That is, no, you do not understand the Texas law. Thanks for the call, Leo. That is not the case. That is just more ridiculousness. And by the way, on the matter of putting women in jail and prosecuting people who have abortions, that is not the intent of any of the heartbeat laws that are in force. That is not the intent of the pro-life movement writ large. There is no one who in the pro-life movement, pro-life legislators, pro-life governors, that is seeking the prosecution of women. That's not what's happening. That's not the statutory language. It is going after providers who violate the law. So, for example, Leo in Wicker Park, who purposely misunderstands the issue. Nice try. You need to work on your acting. It would be, say, for example, Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia, who's spending life in prison right now for killing
thousands of babies.
Well, killing a woman, number one, in addition to violating Pennsylvania state law when it came to abortion services. That's what we're talking about. That's the entirety of the conversation when it comes to law enforcement. So that's what hopefully somebody who is more sensible and thoughtful and not a hack ideologue pretending to be thoughtful and inquisitive could tell your daughter, your friend's daughter in Texas. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, speaking of goofs, James Cromwell, he's an actor. You recognize him if you saw him, if you don't recognize the name. He's in Succession right now. He plays Brian Cox's brother, L.A. Confidential. He was in one of the Jurassic Park movies. Tall, bony-looking guy. Apparently, he is also a animal rights nut.
Yes, he is, and he's not going to pay more for a certain type of milk.
He superglued his hand to the counter of at a Midtown Manhattan Starbucks the other day, wearing a "Free the Animals" T-shirt and protesting the upcharging Starbucks does for vegan milk. Not kidding.
When will you stop charging us more for vegan milk? When will you stop raking in huge profits while customers, animals, and the environment suffer? When will you stop penalizing people for their ethnicity or their morals? The senseless upcharge hurts animals.
The cows don't want to be separated. Do the cows know they're doing this? Do the cows know that they're...
Somebody's got to speak for the cows, you know, because they can't talk, except to animal rights activists. What do we want? An end to upcharging for vegan milk. When do we want it? Soon as James Cromwell removes his super glued hand from the counter at the Midtown Manhattan Starbucks.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
The latest installment in Chicago is the biggest hick town in America. What the hell?
What, today's the toast to Harry Carey?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
A worldwide toast to Harry Carey. It's back. It's been gone for 2 years because of the vid, man.
Yeah, I see this on GN that they've got, you know, the Harry heads are out.
Grant DePorter's ready. Ryan Sandberg's going to be at Harry Carey's on Navy Pier.
Ryan Sandberg's a nice guy.
Yeah, but he's going to be he's leading the toast tonight. So now, can I get you to warm up to that?
I don't want
you and Mike Scott are so over this.
I don't want to say anything negative about Ryan Sandberg because he's a really nice guy. I've gotten to play golf with him a couple times. Very nice guy.
And his fancy friends.
Yeah, that's right. But this, I like Harry Carey too, okay? I also appreciate that the 85 Bears is the best defense in NFL history. come on. Enough.
Well, Mongo should be inducted into the Football Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
Yes.
I'm not against it, but okay. Move on with your lives.
No, but I still want to sing the Super Bowl Shuffle.
Well, go ahead.
I have every word memorized.
All right.
I know. It's the most celebrated sports team in Chicago.
That's just exhausting. All right. $40 billion in Ukraine funding. Good idea. The House seems to think so, including most House Republicans.
$40 billion
may run into a little bit of interference in the Senate because of the nondescript COVID funding and the billions that is included in this. There are a handful of Republican senators who indicate they would oppose this funding, but it's likely to move on to Biden's desk and move on in form to Ukraine and, you know, in the form of hardware, military hardware. I like the Babylon Bee story. Putin looks forward to picking up $40 billion worth of military U.S. military hardware.
Oh,
yeah, little Afghanistan reference there. Very good. Here's Stephen Miller, former Trump domestic advisor, on with Tucker Carlson, explaining why Republicans should oppose the $40 billion in aid to Ukraine. Take a listen. Give us your thoughts. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line, Stephen Miller.
Well, sadly, what you're seeing and what I've learned firsthand for many years in Washington is that the tears of American families do not move the hearts of Washington politicians in all too many cases. You talked about some of this in your monologue tonight. 107,000 young Americans, mostly, killed by drugs pouring across our wide open border. Those tombstones littered across our landscape. There's no bill for them. We have gangs pouring across our border, terrorizing our schools like MS-13. Do you know that this year we only spent $1 billion, $1 billion, on the salaries of ICE deportation officers? $1 billion to get rid of the gangs, the drug dealers, and the criminals murdering our children. $1 billion. But 40 in one bill for Ukraine. There are moms who are going to go to sleep tonight who will not be able to get formula for their children, including moms whose kids have severe allergies, and the one formula they need is not on that store shelf. And they face the excruciating choice of giving their kid a formula they know they will have an allergic reaction to. That's happening right now. No bill for them. The wheels of justice do not turn for them, because there is a fetish in Washington for the citizens of foreign countries, the affairs of foreign countries, the adventures of foreign countries. That's what moves the heart of Washington, not the tears of our own people.
The affairs of foreign countries, not the tears of our own people. That's what moves Washington. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Yay or nay on the $40 billion for Ukraine. By the way, there's that presentation of the disconnect between D.C. and the rest of the country. That's one thing. But Miller does engage in a bit of demagoguery there, talking about the baby formula thing, because there's not a bill for the baby formula. There doesn't really need to be a bill. The baby formula shortage is largely the result of a recall by Abbott and the...
The death of three children, babies, newborn.
What?
That's why they had the recall.
Well, right. So there was the assertion made that the baby formula was responsible for the deaths. The FDA investigated. They concluded that the baby formula was not, but they haven't allowed the Abbott facilities to come back online and produce the formula again. So that's a government's oversight competence issue more so then it's an economic one or even a supply chain one. So let's not conflate issues and pretend like there ought to be a law. Somebody passes a law. Well, there ought to be alacrity in the from the regulatory state, because the lethargy is problematic. And this is another illustration of that. But the larger point that Miller makes, setting aside that piece of demagoguery, about the $40 billion and why Republicans in particular should oppose it. I know people don't want to take off their Ukrainian ribbons or anything, take down the Ukrainian flag from their social media. But what about that? Blank check that the political class in D.C. appears willing to write Ukraine as they ramp up the talk of victory. It's interesting. Ukraine can win. We have to win this thing. You had Seth Moulton. We talked about with Jim Carafano on Monday. Seth Moulton, Marine, and now a Democrat socialist congressman from Massachusetts, were at war with Russia through Ukraine. And then And for those suggesting up until that point that this was a proxy war with Russia that the political class in D.C. is intent upon. Oh, how dare you? This is not a proxy. Well, and then Seth Moulton says effectively that. So, what about concerns in the direction of open-ended commitments, financial and otherwise? Now, the flip side, just to hear both sides, Dan Crenshaw tweeting out in response to the arguments against the funding along the lines of what Stephen Miller said. Say, well, here's what we do. We've got $40 billion in military aid to help the Ukrainian people defend themselves against their Russian invaders. And so we can use that money to help decimate the military of an enemy of America. That would be Putin and Russia without one American life lost. So that's a good deal. OK,
is it a good deal?
Those are the arguments.
Do you think it's a good deal? Because we've already given them billions of dollars and this war could go on forever. I mean, this could be not, a 1 year, it could be a 10-year war.
Well, that's what Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, had to say in a congressional hearing not so long ago. So the money is one thing. The my bigger concern is what exactly is it we're trying to do, and what exactly is are the milestones by which we're going to measure what we're trying to do, and then what is a dynamic that would allow for an exit. By the way, this also against the news that Finland is applying for NATO membership.
Oh.
Yeah. And here we go
Putin's
again.
Not going to like that. And then what? Sweden hopefully will be next.
Hopefully. Is it hopefully? Mm-hmm. You know, these countries, some of these countries are a bit problematic. We think Western nations and we have our own problems too, but I was reminded that Finland is the country that imprisoned a member of parliament who tweeted a photo of the Book of Romans. Yeah.
Well, I'm saying it's good for Finland if Putin decides to invade Finland. I don't know if the Finnish army is really up to snub to defend themselves.
I understand the interest, and this also feeds the argument that, these Nordic countries are worried about Putin's next move, that he's not going to stop in Ukraine if he's not stopped in Ukraine and so forth. That's part of the argument as well. But I just, this Finland thing, too, it's an opportunity to revisit what's going on culturally in some of these countries that we're supposed to defend, because we're defending the free world against the autocrats, right? Well, Finland is criminalizing Christianity. I mean, it's very much like, can we have a real conversation about what Ukraine is and what Ukraine could possibly be, even under Zelensky? What it's been under Zelensky since he was elected, what the best possible outcome would be for Ukraine if they're able to fend off Russia and sort of reestablish their sovereignty. It just sort of like it's very, very black and white. Putin's a bad guy. Yeah, he is a bad guy. Russia's enemy of the state. Yeah, Russia is an enemy of America. But just because they're an enemy of America doesn't mean you do whatever anybody else wants you to do, as long as they're couching it and somehow sticking it to an enemy of America. It's not always as clear as somebody who is pursuing their own interests and wanting us to underwrite them makes it out to be. David in Winnetka. Hey, David.
David.
Yeah, hey. Hi, good morning, guys. A couple things about this. I don't understand, how all this stuff works. So, how do we know that the $40 billion even gets us? First thing, the other thing, how much that money could be used to better our country? They claim that they care about the black lives, this and that, blah, blah, blah. I used to drive for Uber here in Chicago, very south, deep south, deep west. I would see things I've never seen before, and I would tell my suburban friends, and, why is none of that money going to beautify those areas? I would start speaking out against, the BLM movement and things to the such. Uber deactivated me, saying that I was a racist, and it just doesn't understand. I don't get it why it's not going to this country. I guess is my point.
Yeah, thanks for the call, David. I mean, that's the point that's being made by a lot of sort of America firsters, ultra maggers, if you will. MAGA-ers.
MAGA-ers?
MAGA-ers. Ultra-MAGA. Ultra-MAGA. MAGA-ers? Yeah. Victor Davis Hanson writing about exasperated Americans. Furious over the open border. You heard Miller mention that. They're angry their lives are being insidiously destroyed by the Biden inflation and energy prices. They're humiliated by the Biden debacle in Afghanistan. And angrier still over his spiking crime wave and his mean-spirited senility. They resent Biden's efforts to blame all these self-inflicted miseries on Donald Trump or the Putin price hikes or the inability of a presidency to do anything about supposedly organic forces beyond his purview. But behind the popular furor is a sense of impotence in the face of the untruth they are assaulted with day after day. In other words, bullied Americans are angry that people who control the nation's institutions deliberately mislead them and do so because they hate them.
Wow.
Yeah. As usual, VDH is putting his finger on the pulse. That's what you're getting. That's the reaction to the latest $40 billion. It's not because those who are voting against the funding, for the most part, or oppose the funding, they don't want Ukrainians to be able to defend themselves. They don't want Ukrainians to be able to repel the Russians because they're Putin assets. It's none of those things. It's exactly what VDH said. Here's what is being done to me by the institutions I finance here, and I'm being misled by those same institutions who are openly hostile to me. Now, it's not just incompetent, they're openly hostile to me. And if I complain about anything they're doing or the results, what they're doing are visiting upon me and my family, then I'm the bad guy. Exasperating. Mm-hmm. Teresa, Gold Coast.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, $40 billion, I mean, come on. You know, I feel sorry for the people of Ukraine for what's happened to them. But the countries, they're in their own war. Let them fight it. We have no business being in there. The Democrats have completely screwed up this country. We need the help. We need the money here. I'm tired of babysitting everybody.
Thanks for the call, Teresa. Although the whole, like, we need the money here, well, what, you know, that needs to be developed, too, because what, oh, you want the government to spend more money here?
$40 billion could change Detroit or the south or west side of Chicago, maybe.
How so?
Well,
how much have we spent in the last 60 years on Detroit or the south side of Chicago? You think it's a lack of funding, lack of taxpayer funds being devoted to terrible neighborhoods?
No, you're right. It's a lack of leadership and bad leadership.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. So pouring $40 billion into welfare state programs, what does that accomplish? You might as well send it to Ukraine, at least in the form of military. So the whole, like, spend it here, okay, well, you have to give form to that. That's not a good enough argument because we know how the government spends money here. Tom Elgin.
Yeah. It's a leaky bucket, that $40 billion, because I was watching Congress, and one guy was mad because they throw the bill at him. The staffers go through it. $13 million is going to the State Department. And Lindsey Graham and McConnell are in on these things. I know somehow they're making money on these things because they're passing this stuff. And it's just a leaky bucket, all that money. It doesn't even go to Ukraine.
All right, thanks, Tom. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. This is Dr. Henry Kissinger calling in to the show to talk foreign policy with you this morning. I'm 94 years old, but I still have a good mind. Dan, have you read my great book, Diplomacy?
I have not, sir.
I've read sections. Dan, I've read sections of it, Dr. Kissinger. Yes.
Yes, it's great. It's got a lot of the answers.
You know,
Russia
wants fantastic.
Wants to expand to gain warm water ports. World Restored would also be a good book for you to read. We might be able to restore it. You know, I was national security advisor for Richard Nixon.
Yeah, I remember.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gerald Ford, I was Secretary of State. Do you have any questions for me?
No,
I'm
a bit gobsmacked, Dr. Kissinger. It's such a great honor to have you call, and I didn't know you listened to the show.
We elites, we listen to the show. We do. You have lots of influence, Dan and Amy. You do more than you realize.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kissinger. I appreciate your
Have a good day, guys.
Time. Thank you very much. Well done, Frank. Yeah, I
love it. This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Oh, yeah.
Do the dance.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's sing along.
Yeah. Hey, wait. We are the Bears. Shuffling through. Shuffling on down. Do it for you. So bad that you know we're good. Well, I could go on forever, but
no,
we,
please. Yeah.
Tell me. Shut for fun. Shut not stuff for everyone. We're not here to stop no shuffle. We're just here to do the Super Bowl shuffle.
I always felt bad for Gary Fensick in that
video. Why? Oh, because he was... can't dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. He's a white man's dance disease.
It was painful to watch.
Yeah.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and yesterday WGN, in conjunction with The Hill and Emerson College, posted the results of a survey they commissioned.
Okay.
Illinois governor's race.
And the winner is?
There's no winner. Okay. Early voting hasn't even begun. That begins May 19th.
I meant in their poll.
Mm-hmm. It's a statistical dead heat between Richard Irvin and Darren Bailey. The spread right now is 24% for Irvin, 20% for Bailey, 8% for Rabine, 8% for Sullivan, and then on down the line. So 24, 20, 8, 8, Irvin, Bailey, Rabine, Sullivan. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. With all the monies being spent on this race, including by me, are you paying attention yet?
I mean, we're 6 weeks away, folks. It's May, June 28th.
Yeah. Day after our golf outing.
Exactly. That's how I remember it.
Yeah.
So you'll be in town, so that's good, so you can vote.
So,
I guess you don't have to be in town.
Interesting to note that $20 million in and all of the running around and all of the bloviating you're hearing from Combine Republicans that this is Irvin's. He's got it locked up. He's got Ken Griffin's money. We don't even have to play this out. I mean, we'll play it out for appearance's sake, but this is a done deal. Doesn't look like a done deal. And there's been some trash polls that have been published recently, too, that are, you know, I don't know, either poorly conceived methodologically or they're in the tank for Irvin. I don't know which. Doesn't matter. That's where the race is. It's a dead heat.
Well, Richard Irvin, who had his first press conference in the 4 months since he announced that he was running, it was a chaotic disaster. And here's some highlights of it because he could not control the media at all.
It's definitely speculation. Let me finish. Talk about the extreme of signing this legislation that allows. Hold on a second. Let me finish. Voters, listen. Hold on. Voters know my record. I'm pro-life, but hold on. But let me finish. You know, let me finish.
Sounds like
you know,
Perot.
When so many of our fellow soldiers. Let me finish. So let me just say this. Let's talk about my record. Let's talk about my record as mayor. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
And then they're screaming questions about him. You know, if COVID numbers go up in Aurora, are you going to reinstate the mask mandate? Mayor Irvin, come back. And that guy wants to be governor. And that's his first time in front of the media. With, you know, just to get like an actual press conference. He's not up for the job. He's not ready.
Do Republicans think that...
That he's a Republican?
Well, okay. Do they think that we can... That Republic... We? I'm a Republican. That we can beat J.B. Pritzker? Or not? Are you enthusiastic about this primary and about the prospect of a relatively compressed election cycle going from a June 28th primary to a November general, much more compressed than normally in Illinois? Are you excited about this, or are you just, sort of watching it dispassionately? You're paying attention to it sort of generally, but you're not really excited about the candidates or the prospect for whoever the nominee is.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I just find it just amazing how everyone forgets what Governor Pritzker did to our families the past 3 years and to small businesses. People just forget about it. Like, oh, yeah, but now things are better. And, you know, now we don't have to wear masks anymore. Bull jive. The next pandemic's right around the corner.
Well,
what they declare would be a pandemic.
You also have a fresh set of problems, like economic ones.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true.
So,
but that was brought on by the draconian COVID measures that they put in place.
Well, I understand. I understand the dot connecting, but rather than sort of litigating something that people want to move on from, you need to address what they're focused on right now. And that's, crime.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly in Chicago Metro and some of the mid-sized urban centers around the state. And obviously economic matters between inflation, the market hammering that's not good for people's 401ks or stock portfolios. So,
I mean, you mentioned crime yesterday. Woman shot her 3-year-old girl. 40 rounds were fired in that shooting alone. 40.
Yeah, so...
just civil unrest. I mean, North Avenue and Clark, people are... Mobs, hordes of people. Just summer night, kids, and even it's a school night, jumping on CTA buses, smashing car windows, all that. Well, it's a Wednesday night, Dan. You expect that on the weekends.
No, you don't.
Which is sad. I should never expect it.
No, you don't. That's not true. You can't say that with a straight face. Not if you've lived in Chicago for the past... 20 years or 2 years or 2 minutes?
When school's in session? No, I don't expect it on a Wednesday night driving home and you see that.
Okay. Well, then it's Groundhog Day for you in Chicago every day, because that's just the statement that is afoul of the experience in Chicago, afoul of the data, afoul of myriad anecdotes. So, can we stop feigning surprise? The question is, what do you want to do about it? And what do you think is possible to do about it? And probably the latter precedes the former. Is anything possible? Do you think it can change? Do you feel like you have some influence that you can affect outcomes? I would say this. I've said it on the show. It's an uphill climb against Pritzker. Pritzker is not nearly as vulnerable as some Republicans would want you to believe.
Right.
So you're going to have to thread a needle. You're not going to outspend him, which is the establishment's approach. Find a billionaire to go up with a billionaire. So they've got Ken Griffin, they think. We'll see. You're going to have to be very pointed and surgical with your message. So that's the challenge. The good news is the landscape provides for it. Because of what's happened at the federal level and how it is being visited upon the state and the buildup of bad policy, the landscape provides for it. When you have 8 in 10 Illinoisans saying the state's on the wrong track, what you have is the possibility. It's sort of inert, but you have the raw materials for a revolt. The question is, who can spark it? It's the same thing that, we go back to the Trump example in 2016. You had all of the raw materials for a revolt, but nobody really was connecting to foment it. And then Trump came down an escalator and all hell broke loose. It relatively quickly, too, within the first several months of his campaign, which is true. He went from like a joke in the minds of many, myself included.
Myself included on that, too.
To not a joke. So the landscape provides for it. These raw materials are there. But you have to have somebody that makes a play for that revolt. And you have to have people who believe that a revolt is possible and who make, maybe a choice that they would not make in better times, the same way that they did with Trump in 2016, having had their fill of the Republicans offered by the usual suspects.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
Vincent St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, you know, the people I'm talking to, my friends and my relatives, because I'm definitely trying to get interest in it from them, to them. Okay, Rabine, I'm hearing it, or Bailey. And so that's where that's going. And I am definitely interested. I can't believe anybody believes Irvin is a Republican, if they're paying attention, but so that's what I'm hearing, Rabine. People like Rabine. Mm-hmm. I just ask them, and they say Rabine. So that's the problem. I mean, are we going to waste our vote?
As much as I like Gary, if you can waste your vote if you vote from, yeah, Gary's not going to win this primary. I don't know how to break it to people, but he's not going to win this primary.
Yeah, the so choice, that's what I'm going to tell him.
It's coming down. It's going to come down
between Bailey and Irvine.
Bailey and Irvin probably. Irvin. I mean, Jesse Sullivan has money, but you know, he's still a long way from home. Thanks for the call, Vince. Clay and Wheeling.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Illinois Republicans are running in a primary for governor? If you would have asked me without listening to the show, I would have had no idea. These are not Republicans. As always, the closest thing is maybe Bailey, because, you know, I saw him with the whole mass thing, you know, 2 years ago. But these are not Republicans. These are Illinois Democrats playing Republicans. You know, we don't have our own DeSantis. We don't have our own Trump. That's what this state needs. We need somebody who's going to come in here with a sledgehammer, a wrecking ball, and take it to every policy that Democrats and including Illinois Republicans have installed in this state. Disgraceful.
Thanks for
get
the
some.
Oh, sorry.
Get a backbone. Get a backbone, Illinois Republicans. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Well, so that's sort of a good example of what I'm talking about is out there. And can you provide a constructive outlet to Clay, who's a young guy? Can you provide a constructive outlet and encouragement for somebody who's clearly animated by policy and politics, but feels disaffected? That's to me is the riddle that somebody needs to solve, at least if somebody wants to be the governor with an R next to their name. Karen Beecher.
Oh, good morning, darlings. Hey, Dan, I'm 10 years older than you, and I feel like I'm in the political fight of my life with this governor's race. I've been politically active almost all my life because both of my parents were. I was involved in the No Peatone Airport campaign.
Oh, yeah.
I work with our shared friend Judy O'Gala to make sure she gets her fanny back on the Will County Board.
Uh-huh.
But this, I, as old as I am, I don't know if people are going to do the math. I have never had a governor that I can proudly say, hey, I'm from the state of Illinois. And I really feel I'm going to put in all the muscle I have, all the shoulder I have, all the elbow grease I have into making sure that Darren Bailey is our next governor. And I feel like this is so important at this old time of my life.
All right. Thanks for the call, Karen.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy were talking about the Illinois gubernatorial primary at the end of last hour. And of course, in Illinois now, it's not just for Cook County anymore. You can be put on the permanent vote by mail list.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. State law.
That's not fraudulent or anything.
Doesn't
for people who want to vote two or three times.
Doesn't present any problems.
Yeah.
John Daniel Davidson, writing over at the Federalist, also informs us about what's happening in Alaska. You know, they've got that vacancy, the congressman.
Congressional seat.
Yeah, Don Young, that Sarah Palin's running for, among others. He writes, does Davidson, this is going to be Alaska's first ever statewide mail-in primary election. There will be no in-person voting at all. Every single voter on the state's bloated and error-ridden voter rolls, as Davidson characterized them, automatically was mailed a ballot. There will be no verification requirements for these mail-in ballots.
Oh,
voters
great.
Will simply need to fill out their ballot and have a witness observe them sign the envelope. The state's Division of Election has explicitly said it will not verify the authenticity of the signatures on the ballots.
Well, then why even have an election? Because it doesn't seem very secure.
Yeah, and so that's Alaska. What does that have to do with Illinois or any of the states that could be in play in 2022 Senate races, 2024, obviously, national election? Well, because, as Davidson argues, Alaska's insane statewide mail-in election is a template for how the left wants to run elections nationwide. So what you're seeing there is, in Alaska, of all places, which is ostensibly a red state, and he writes, Alaska presents a unique and in some ways ideal test case for the left. For one thing, the voter rolls are a mess. Voter registration was 118% of estimated voting age population in Alaska. That's a bit of a problem. Making matters worse is a 2016 Alaska law that automatically registers residents to vote when they submit an application for the state's permanent fund dividend, you know, from the oil and gas. He goes on to say the state. This is interesting to the cover story from the state officials. The state government's weak excuse for conducting a statewide mail-in election is that because the special must be held within 90 days of the vacancy, so in this case, Congressman Young's death, there simply wasn't time to hire and train the 3,000 poll workers a standard in-person election would require. But even if you buy that, the state has not yet explained why it decided to conduct the mail-in election without any mechanism to verify the authenticity of the signatures on the ballots. Well, I can think of one reason why they wouldn't want to do that. Because then there's no way to audit what happened. And so you can come out and declare, we had an election that was seamless and without controversy. We had a free and fair election and fraud-free at that. If you don't have any safeguards in place, then how can you audit what, if anything, illicit transpired? For more on this and other issues, pleased to be joined by John Nolte again. John Nolte, Breitbart News senior writer. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Good to talk to you again.
It's such a fascinating case of what's happening in Alaska, because it's not Illinois or California or New York or New Jersey. And I know we've had a couple of dozen states move to change the way they administer elections in 2022 and 2024 per the experience in 2020, including Georgia. But you still have this nagging feeling that there are real vulnerabilities for something akin to what happened in 2020 happening again.
Well, the Democrats are going to do whatever they can get away with to steal elections. That's just what they do. And they've always been doing it. That's just something that's just part of our life. I mean, we have to beat them by the margin of fraud. So there is no better way to steal an election than with mail-in votes. And I don't know if the 2020 election was stolen, but I know there was plenty of fraud. It might have been legally stolen with all these unconstitutional changes in the states to allow mail-in voting. But yeah, it is despairing, and we need to keep fighting it. We need to keep exposing it. The truth is on our side, and, you know, we have to have faith that eventually that's going to matter.
Well, and the voter rolls, too. I mean, just to give you a concrete example here in Cook County, this will come as no surprise, but it's just interesting. I mean, I've got a voter card of a friend of mine's mom. She just got it in the mail the other day. She's been dead since 2009.
Now,
we bumped, because I have access to a statewide voter database, we bumped up her voter registration against her voting history. And the good news is that she hasn't voted since 2009 when she passed away.
But they haven't cleaned the voter rolls.
That's the point. Exactly. And, you know, I suspect Cook County and Illinois are not alone in that problem.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats are going so far as to allow non-citizens to vote in local elections.
Yeah.
I mean, they know they cannot win legally. They know they cannot win based on merit. Their ideas are terrible. Their cities are garbage. Their track record is a disaster. You know, they want to teach gay porn in elementary schools. They want to let men who are mentally ill share a locker room with your daughter. They cannot win based on merit or legally, so they have to cheat.
The other thing you write about recently, in terms of their over-rotation on issues, and we're seeing that in the response to the leaked Dobbs draft opinion, is the radicalization of the Democrat Socialist Party when it comes to abortion really precipitated these laws in many states, including in Mississippi, that brought Roe v. Wade to the high court.
I think that one of the biggest mistakes the Democrats made with abortion was to get so extreme that they just turned everyone off. We're one of the few civilized countries in the world that allows abortion, not just up until birth, but even after birth, where if the baby is accidentally not killed during the abortion, it just is allowed to die of exposure on a table somewhere. And we went from safe, rare, and legal, which was Bill Clinton's approach to abortion. We went from discussing abortion soberly, and Democrats basically approached it as a terrible necessity, to celebrating abortion, to abortion being magical, and abortion being empowerment. And I think that was the biggest mistake the Democrats made. And the best thing the pro-life movement did was to get rid of the rhetoric, you know, that pretty much defined them in the 80s and 90s and turned so many people off. But the pro-life movement switched tactics and said, well, how far are y'all willing to go with this? So laws were passed. I mean, do you really want to kill a baby after 20 weeks when we know it can live outside the womb? And Democrats were like, hell yes. And then do you really want to kill a baby, you know, while it's being born? Can someone do that legally? And Democrats were, yes, 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 we're going to do that. Of course we are. And that really exposed how radical they are, how extreme they are, and they dragged the party along with them. So you have Joe Biden and you have all these so-called mainstream Democrats saying they want no limits on abortion. And the very idea of that horrifies 70% of the public. 50% of the public may want Roe v. Wade to stand, but 70% of the public wants some sort of restriction. There's no reason to get an abortion after 12 or 14 weeks. If you haven't done it by then, you know, you have no excuse, because you knew you were pregnant by that point. So in many ways, Democrats shot themselves in their own foot, because they just would not be reasonable on the issue. Now, I'm totally opposed to abortion, but I'm just saying, as far as the country goes, they became unreasonable. The country was prepared to settle at 12 weeks, 20 weeks, something like that. And Democrats couldn't take yes for an answer.
And what do you think about the draft opinion that is being leaked, and what ramifications, if anything, is that going to have on this?
I think the leak itself was, I think that's just a you know, oh my gosh, this is a huge story. I don't think it's a big story. It just got leaked, so what? I don't think it's the end of the world. I do think it was leaked from the left, and I think the hope was that there would be this nationwide uproar And to me, that's another big story about all this. Where's the uproar? You know, the Democrats told us this would be civil war. Well, where is it? I mean, I see a few hundred kooks, you know, that will protest anything.
And anywhere.
The Democrats were expecting hundreds of thousands of women to take to the streets. We were supposed to see George Floyd, too. We were supposed to see what, you know, the outrage after Trump was elected. You know, all these people in these blue cities, where are they? Nobody's protesting. The silence is deafening around this. Nothing is happening the way the Democrats expected.
That's so true, because Governor Pritzker, I remember I was at that press conference, and he said, that, you know, the streets are going to erupt. You know, we're going to have marches every day this summer. You're like, what? We had one, and it was about 100 people.
Yeah, the kooks came out. You've got a few radicals out there, but as far as grassroots, as far as like what we saw after George Floyd, and that's before Black Lives Matter went crazy, you know, there was a natural outpouring of outrage after Trump was elected within a day. You had thousands of people in the street. That was a natural outpouring of outrage. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but it was what it was. Nobody's outraged over this Roe v. Wade thing, except a few kooks. And I think that is going to make the justices, if any of them were swayable, say, well, maybe this is the right time to overturn Roe v. Wade. Nobody cares right now.
Well, the interesting thing, too, in terms of overreaching, is there are a lot of people, though, at least according to the surveys that were sort of taken on the spot, that don't like what they see outside of the homes of Supreme Court justices, you know, the obvious the obvious attempt by some of those kooks, as you call them, to influence those judges. They don't like seeing that. They don't like the doxing and the coming to my home and that sort of thing. That just rubs people sort of across the spectrum the wrong way.
Yeah, and you're right. And they always do that. They overreach. They get totally hysterical. They become violent. They cross a line of decency, and it just hurts the overall Democrat Party, because Joe Biden doesn't even have the sand. He doesn't even have the moral integrity to say these people should not be marching in front of their homes. It's wrong. March in front of the Supreme Court. March, you know, get a permit. We can march anywhere you want. Please march. But they don't even have the moral decency to do that. And I, you know, it's just more proof. I think 2020 is just going to be a total blowout.
2022.
Yeah, right. It's going to be a total blowout.
Well, and what about Republicans blunting the potential blowout quotient there with things like unlimited aid to Ukraine? You had, talked about this a bit earlier in the show, you had Stephen Miller on Tucker yesterday really taking a strong position against the $40 billion aid package, given the precarious economic times at home. So there's very much a Trumpian America first sentiment in opposition to Ukraine aid, even if there's a lot of members of Congress who aren't willing to take that hit quite yet. And one wonders if the America First folks don't have their finger on the pulse of the electorate more so than rank and file members of McCarthy or McConnell's caucuses.
Yeah, I wrote when this whole Ukraine thing exploded, I wrote within a day that Republicans had better not catch the war fever, because if they catch the war fever, they are going to damage their chances in 2022. And for the most part, they've been pretty smart about it. But this $40 billion package, it's just crazy. There's no oversight of it. It's hastily put together. And I just see it as part of the moral panic. I'm very sorry what's happening in Ukraine. I hope Putin is humiliated. I hope he gets a bloody nose from it. But, you know, we got baby formula shortages here. Gas is spiking in ways I've never seen. Yep. I mean, I went on a camping trip 2 weeks ago for a week. When I left, gas was $3.80. When I came back, it was $4.19. Yes. It's just shocking. And yeah, I think that's a concern. I'm not as worried about it as I was when it first started. But this $40 billion thing is definitely a mistake.
And by the way, on the gas matter, the news out yesterday was that the Biden administration is canceling oil and gas lease sales in Alaska and the Gulf.
What?
So that's not going to help.
Well, it's deliberate. I mean, they are trying to force us into electric cars, even though electric cars are ultimately run by fossil fuels. But that's what they're trying to do. They want to hurt us. Democrats get into office, and they push and push and push. Obamacare, they don't care if it's unpopular. They're going to get it in the system, and then they get wiped out. But they know they're always going to get back, and then they push and push and push again.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care who they hurt. They mm-hmm. don't care who they hurt in the process. All they care about is power and transforming the world into their sick little utopia. These people are Nazis.
John Nolte, Breitbart News senior writer. John, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy are friends, Alex Primetime Stein 99 and Cassidy Campbell.
Yeah.
Before the Arlington, Texas City Council this week, offering a new installment of their artistry. Here is Alex Stein's time in public comment.
Alex Stein.
Yo, what up, Bear Ross? I'm Primetime 99. I'm the real boss. I'm on the grind all the time. And you know, you see the Supreme Court trying to limit abortion. Let me tell you something. I wish my mom aborted me.
Oh
so I prepare something for all y'all. Y'all got to relax. Y'all just chill out, vibe out. This is for y'all. Maya Ross, I am the boss. I want to have an abortion.
Oh,
don't cause a big commotion. Stick the needle in your womb. Kill the baby, get the vacuum. Throw it in the trash. Planned Parenthood accepts all cash. Baby's got to go. Supreme Court, Alito is a hoe. What can I say? Vaccinate a baby, abort it every day. Then have an abortion. Partay, I'm a pimp on a blimp. Abort that baby. Don't say maybe. Raul, get an abortion in the pool.
In the pool?
Yeah, you know, it's, you got to rhyme.
Oh
yeah, it's a little
God.
It's a little pitchy.
You think?
Doesn't have the best singing voice, but I like the shock value of these guys in addition to some of the lyrics. Well, we'll have to get to Cassidy Campbell a little bit later on. Cassidy Campbell donning the persona of the Black Lives Matter activist addressing Arlington, Texas's city council. I love the use of the public comment section, though, by these guys.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Our next guest reminds me I got to do this shoot for USO tomorrow up at Northbrook Sports Club.
A photo shoot?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm doing a calendar for the USO. No, a shooting event like a sporting clays for the USO.
Oh, well, don't get a bruise on your arm from the recoil.
Yeah, thanks. So, see what
you
I can
use
do.
The pad there.
Because we're talking about supporting veterans, Fisher House, people know Fisher House, right? You know Fisher House. Fisher House is a nonprofit that serves military families by allowing family members to stay for free on site, like at Hines, for example, mm-hmm. the VA, when there's a family member, a veteran, who's being treated for some medical condition. Well, they've got a Ride for Warriors coming up, does Friends of Fisher House, Illinois. And to tell us more about that, we're pleased to be joined by Command Sergeant Major Newt Wick, Ride for Warriors, Friends of Fisher House at Hines, Hines VA. Newt, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Dan and Amy, for having me on to speak about this great event. This is our first attempt at this to raise funding for the new Fisher House up at Lovell, which is going to be a 16-bedroom private suite for these families, and we also help sustain the 20-bedroom suite at Hines VA. So it is on Sunday, this coming Sunday, excuse me. Registration opens at 9 o'clock in the morning. Sorry, I keep using military time.
Yeah, I'm right.
It was in too long. But it should be a great event. I've been watching the weather We've been talking to the powers that be, and the weather should be opening up. I see 10% of possibility of rain till 6 in the morning, but kickstands are up at 10:30-ish from Miller Meadow in Forest Park, and it is a 100% 38-mile escorted ride all the way up to Harley-Davidson and Lakeshore up in Libertyville. And we will have vendors at the end. We're going to have a couple food vendors. We will have Patriot Guard. They're putting the flags up at the entrance at Miller Meadow and also at the end point. We are being led and followed by two antique fire trucks. We will have EMS support intermixed with the people riding. So I think we prepared for every contingency except for getting people out to support a great cause and help families in need when the warriors are down and out.
For those of us who aren't familiar with the Fisher House, just explain what it is and what you do.
Well, and I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. Okay. If you know what the Ronald McDonald House is, yeah. It's pretty much the same thing, but for military families. And it helps out those that their loved ones are in a medical emergency or medical situation, and the families have no place to stay. We put them up in one of the Fisher houses so they can be close to the family and support their loved ones.
So wait, you're starting at Miller Meadow Forest Preserve in Forest Park, and then you're going up to Lakeshore Harley Davidson in Libertyville. So what's the route? Do you have to get on the Eisenhower? Are you going up the expressway?
No. Oh. Safety was my biggest concern.
Yeah, you don't want to be in the expressway. Shootouts and stuff.
Yeah, well, that'd be like ping pong balls.
Yeah.
We're going through Forest Park, Maywood, Melrose Park, River Grove, Franklin Park, Schiller Park, Rosemont, Des Plaines, Mount Prospect, Prospect Heights, Wheeling, Lincolnshire, Vernon Hills, and Libertyville. And we have a route that keeps us off the expressway. A lot of it is four lane. We'll be in the right-hand lane, again, with the escorts and lights flashing. And I will give a safety briefing because that is the most critical thing. I mean, you can't have an event without keeping the participants safe. So we're going to stay off the expressways. It'll be probably about 35 miles per hour, slow, to make it easy so we don't get that accordion effect with motorcycles. And our end goal is to get a lot of people out to support us and get everybody to the end point safely.
Do you have, any motorcycles with sidecars for people like me who want to participate but, don't have a bike?
If you have a motorcycle with sidecar, if you have a motorcycle with tracks on it, if you have, anything like that, you're more than welcome to join us.
Dan, have you ever ridden a motorcycle?
Yeah, I've ridden a motorcycle.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're not going to have you participate.
Yes, I have a custom built chopper. So
yeah, I watch Sons.
I can't ride it though because I'm running it.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Well, I say I watch Sons of Anarchy, and so it got me sort of interested in motorcycles.
Really?
And becoming a member of a motorcycle gang. I haven't done that yet.
Club.
But I'm, club, excuse me, the terminology.
Gang has a negative connotation, Dan.
So does club. I haven't made that decision yet, though, but I'll certainly let you know on that news. So the hope here is, by the way, it's only $35 per rider, $10 per passenger. Tell us sort of more about the particulars of the event and where people can get information, buy tickets, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. We do have a website put up, and you can register online. And the address for that is fofhil.org. And it has our flyer right on top, and you can click on a button to register. And it gives us gives the visitor more information about what Fisher House is. It starts, registration opens at 9 o'clock at Miller Meadow and Forest Park. We will have a presentation of colors by cadets from Proviso West, and then a blessing of the bikes and kickstands up. Vendors and everybody will show up at Lakeshore Harley-Davidson at the same time, so we're in position. We will have a DJ, some side raffles, and we will have a remembrance table where we have a ceremony by Rolling Thunder Chapter 2 up there that will place all the military service colors and caps on a table. And they to remember the missing that are not with us today. And we will have a 50-50 raffle. drawing that you had to be present at the end, and the event ends at 3 o'clock up there.
And how much are you hoping to raise for the Fisher House?
Well, I can't put a number on it. Anything is better than nothing in my book, but we're trying to raise as much as possible. We have other events planned for the year, a golf outing and what have you, to keep raising money to outfit the suites and everything for both Fisher houses.
Well, what's the cost of what you're trying to accomplish? I mean, with the outfitting of the houses, the Fisher houses.
Well,
ballpark.
Again, I'm only just a board member,
yeah.
But I believe the number's around between 600 and 1,000 and 1 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that sounds right. Fisher houses are really nice, and they should be.
They are very nice, and if you ever want to do a tour of one, I mean, the Heinz one is open, and they'll walk you around.
I've been through the Heinz one, yeah.
And what's the reaction of people that you've helped? Is there any stories that you'd want to share with us and our listeners?
I'm sorry.
Oh, just some story, the people that you've helped, and you know, their gratitude and their gratefulness to you.
Well, I mean, I only can speak from the stories I've read. I haven't met the people that were involved, but the families are so appreciative. As one would expect, that they are able to be with their loved ones and able to comfort them and also give them moral support. So that in itself is more of a healing factor than, you know, being away and wondering what's happening and if you're being taken care of and everything that comes with that.
So is it only choppers? It's only motorcycles? Like what if I've got, if I dusted off my old Vespa and then put Amy on the back as my old lady, could we ride in that?
You know, I think, Dan, we could tuck you in at the end of the trail of the procession.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Put your flashes on. We'll find a space for you.
All right, very good, very good. He is Newt Wick. He's Command Sergeant Major, Ride for Warriors, Friends of Fisher House at Heinz. This is this Sunday, starting point from Heinz VA to Miller Meadow Forest Preserve in Forest Park. And then the end point is up at the Lakeshore Harley-Davidson in Libertyville. For more information, to buy tickets, if you can't ride, to support Friends of Fisher House for what Newt was outlining there, attempting to do to outfit the rooms for military families, go to FOFHIL, Friends of Fisher House, FOFHIL.org. $35 per rider, $10 per passenger, or whatever else you can give. Newt Wick. Good. Thanks for joining us, and good luck with the ride this weekend.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you both for the opportunity. And, again, hope for good weather.
Yep, we sure do, and thank you so much for all that you do. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Sad little man, sad little man. You better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, sad little man. You don't fool me, you sad little man.
Dan and Amy, and that Fauci theme music means that sad little man is in the news again. He was before the House Appropriations Committee yesterday, and he was asked if the pandemic is over.
Oh.
Nothing is over.
Yeah.
But when you get down to a level where it isn't disrupting society, it isn't causing deaths that stress your hospital system, and you have a level of infection that, for example, might be comparable to what you see with respiratory syncytial virus or parainfluenza, even though it's prevalent throughout, it wouldn't be considered a pandemic in the classic sense. But there's a lot of gray zone about the definition. So I don't think you're going to see all of a sudden one day there's going to be a declaration that the pandemic is over. It will likely be that it is no longer in the pandemic phase, and it's more of an endemic kind of infection that you could live with. Right now, we're not there. I mean, if anybody asks that question, that's okay. For sure.
Not there. So the pandemic is still on. For more on this, please be joined by Alex Berenson, freelance journalist. AlexBerenson.substack.com is where you find his writings. Best-selling author of the just-released Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Rights, and Lives. Alex, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Nothing is over. The pandemic not over.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know what to say to him. They've been wrong at every step. Here's what I know, okay? They failed. Everything we did failed, okay? We failed to eradicate this. I think we probably failed to meaningfully alter the course of it with lockdowns and masks and, frankly, with vaccines. If you look at Europe, Europe had exactly the same trajectory as we did, even though they locked down much harder. If you look at red states versus blue states, it's the same thing. The only thing that seemed to make any difference to any of it was being in Asia. The Asian countries did much better, although now they're getting hit. Nobody knows why. This has all been a giant, it's been a giant overreaction from the very beginning, and we're still talking about it. We can't let it go. And meanwhile, the truth, which is that now people who've been double vaccinated and double boosted are constantly getting infected. Look at all the politicians, like the governor of New York, Susan Rice, you know, all Bill Gates, all these people, they're all getting infected. The vaccines have clearly do nothing to stop infection or transmission. We are just going to have to live with this. And frankly, we're going to have to hope that the vaccines, that the mRNA vaccines, I mean specifically, the ones that the United States and other, you know, advanced countries use, didn't do damage. And frankly, it's too early to know that either right now. And so, yes.
And what's still lost in the conversation, I mean, all those people that were sick, no one had to go to the hospital. No one, Kamala Harris had, Nancy Pelosi had it. She didn't even know.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, they want to say it's because they're vaccinated. It's not true. It's because this, for most people who aren't, you know, again, morbidly obese or you know, unfortunately, really immunocompromised or really old, was always a mild or moderate infection. There are many, many people. It's not because it's Omicron. Omicron is milder. But many, many, many people got COVID in 2020 and 2021 and didn't even know it. I mean, one of the good things that's happened in the last few months is that everybody has gotten COVID, vaccinated or not, and they've all seen how mild it is for most healthy adults, certainly for children. And that has, you know, that has changed the trajectory of this, because there's this tiny hardcore of people on the left who, you know, who are still desperate for all these restrictions, but everybody else really has moved on.
Well, the other thing, though, that's happened is through the policies that you were describing, we have made more people vulnerable to more serious impact from COVID. A survey by the American Psychological Association found 42% of Americans gained weight since the start of the pandemic, with an average weight gain of 29 pounds.
Oh, that's the average?
Yes. Yeah. So now, because of locking people down and because
people
have gotten heavier, now you're actually creating a whole new cohort of Americans who have more risk associated with COVID.
Yes, and we've done tremendous psychological damage, especially to children and young adults. And you know, I mean, and especially with these parents who are afraid, and you know, and broadcasting that fear to their children. It is so wrong what we have done. It's funny, right? I've been on the forefront of this fight against these useless measures for 2 years. And people say to me, well, you know, like, do you have to keep doing this? And unfortunately, I don't want to keep talking about this stuff anymore, but there is no choice. First of all, we have to figure out, you know, how much good or bad the vaccine did. And at this point, I think we don't know. We may never know, but we have to try to figure that answer out. And second, we have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Because these people on the left, it's like they just want to pretend that what they did worked, that somehow it wasn't a complete failure. And believe me, if there's another coronavirus or there's another influenza, you know, there's a bad flu, they're going to try this again.
Well,
make sure it never happens again.
You have Bill Gates's book out, How to Prevent the Next Pandemic, and it's basically we should rerun what we did, just do it faster.
That's right, which is insane, okay? I mean, it's like that old joke, the food is terrible and the portions are too small.
So, Alex, you've been right on this all along, and your work on Twitter got you banned from Twitter.
And by the way, I was when we were talking about Elon Musk taking over Twitter, which I want you to know, Alex, because you'll be very impressed and touched, I'm sure. When I said who should be released out of the Twitter gulag, I didn't say Donald Trump's name first.
I said Trump.
I said Alex Berenson.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I need to talk to you about that for a minute. So I sued Twitter in federal court
in San Francisco, and everybody said the suit was going to be dismissed because, you know, these suits are generally dismissed. Trump's lawsuit was dismissed last week. My suit was not dismissed.
Really?
My suit survived. No, nobody knows this because there's been an essentially complete media blackout. Even the conservative media doesn't really understand what happened 2 weeks ago. My suit is moving forward past the motion to dismiss, and I'm going to get discovery, meaning Twitter has to turn over documents, all the documents it has about me, including its communications with outside federal agencies and other companies. That means for the first time, we are going to get a look inside the censorship machine. And this is they can't avoid this. A federal judge has ordered it, and it's going to come in the next few weeks. It is a big deal. And unfortunately, nobody seems to have, like, picked up on the significance of it. But that is happening. And so, you know, the suit is going forward, and the discovery date is June 20th. So I think Twitter will probably try to get a protective order, meaning they'll try to say that I can't disclose what I find to anybody else. But my lawyers and I are going to fight that.
Good.
Yeah, and I did. I read your Substack, so I saw that you also have a raise going on for essentially the legal fees associated with taking on Twitter. Again, alexberenson.substack.com is where you go to subscribe to get your writings, as well as to support this lawsuit against Twitter that you're fighting.
Yeah, so it's a GoFundMe because, again, it is going to be expensive. I didn't want to raise money before because I wanted to make sure, you know, I didn't want to ask people what mortgages pay, inflation, and, you know, things, you know, people don't necessarily have extra money to throw around. But because we've passed the motion to dismiss, this is now, this is now really happening, and I'm more comfortable asking sort of members of the public if they want to be part of this to donate to the GoFundMe or to, you know, or to send my lawyer a check, which... it is going to be expensive, but it's, you know, we've already raised in the last 24 or 12 hours, really, since I put this thing up, we've raised almost $100,000. So people want to be part of this fight.
Great, great. Yeah. I wanted to get your distillation of some of the news on vaccines since you were mentioning it, since you write so meticulously about it, both the Pfizer data dump as well as the news on J&J.
Sure. So J&J has been, essentially banned from use in the United States. They didn't quite come out and say that, but they said, you know, if you're eligible for the mRNA vaccines, you shouldn't take the J&J vaccine, which works through a different mechanism in your body. Now, to my mind, if you really look hard at the safety profile of the J&J and the mRNA vaccines, it's hard to see a difference. In fact, in the clinical trials, the J&J vaccine actually... people who took it were less likely to die than people who received the placebo, meaning it appeared actually to, and it's hard to know what this means, but to reduce the overall risk of death, although that may have been a statistical anomaly. But that was not true of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. In other words, there was no benefit to mortality for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine. So why are we saying the J&J vaccine is less safe? I mean, from the very beginning, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there has been an obvious and clear bias, I don't know if it's the word, toward the mRNA vaccines, toward the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, and away from the J&J vaccines, much less the other vaccines, the vaccines that use older technology. And whether that's because the NIH was sort of involved in the development of the Moderna vaccine, or whether there's some other more sinister reason, I mean, I hate to think it's anything worse than that, the government has kind of had its thumb on the scale towards the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines all along. I mean, I will say this, the vaccines are over, okay? The stocks are way down. I mean, down almost 75% from their peaks last summer. And we are just piling up vaccine doses in inventory. Nobody is taking a third dose. Nobody's taking a fourth dose right now. And even if coronavirus comes roaring back in the fall, which I don't know if it will, Anthony Fauci doesn't know if it will, nobody knows if it will, I think there's going to be a real reluctance to take these vaccines because people are quite, it's just obvious, they don't work for very long. To the extent they work at all, they don't work for very long, and they have real side effects.
Well, what about, I mean, we have so many vaccine mandates here in Chicago with police officers, firefighters, EMTs, and also with, you know, Chicago public school teachers. If you don't get vaccinated, you have to get tested on a weekly basis. Do you think that's going to continue in the fall?
No, I think it's going to go away. I think sort of bit by bit it's going away. I mean, you don't hear boo about vaccines for kids, mRNA vaccine mandates for kids. I think people in the, you know, vaccine community are aware that if they push too hard on this, there will be a backlash that will destroy all vaccines, including the ones that, to my mind, work much better and have a much better risk-benefit profile than these mRNA vaccines. So I think they're not going to push. And I think that, you know, stuff will either stop being enforced or actually be repealed to the extent there is still stuff.
Speaking of, you know, sort of the motivations, the incentives, the relationships with between NIH and the pharma companies, open the books per FOIAs and fighting with the NIH, got the NIH to disclose over 22,000 royalty payments totaling $134 million paid to the agency and nearly 1,700 NIH scientists just between the years 2009 to 2014. And that includes, we don't have the details, but that includes 23 royalty payments to Tony Fauci. I wonder what you think of this in terms of starting to dig, and maybe if Republicans take over Congress, dig deeper into conflicts of interest at NIH.
So yes, there is much to dig into, right? Here's the problem. You do want good scientists working for the government. And, you know, if they make discoveries, you know, you want them to be compensated to some extent, you know, for those discoveries. And you know, the way we do that, you know, you get these royalty payments from patents for discoveries that you made. I don't think that Tony Fauci should be doing that. If you're a bench level scientist, that's one thing. If you are in charge of policy, it's different. And you shouldn't be taking that money, because you do run into this question of, again, why is the NIH leaning and the FDA leaning on the mRNA vaccines and not the other vaccines? Does money play a role in that? So I don't have a problem with this sort of philosophically that if you're a scientist who makes an important discovery, you should get some money, even if you're working for the government. And, you know, the government spends money on this stuff, and it shouldn't just give it away to the companies. That would just be more profit for the companies. So I don't have a problem philosophically, but I do have a problem with people at the top level getting this money. And in terms of investigating Fauci, there is going to be investigation to be done.
Alex Berenson, freelance journalist, alexberenson.substack.com, bestselling author of the just released Pandemia, How Coronavirus Hysteria Took Over Our Government, Rights, and Lives. And don't forget, if you want to help him out in that fight against Twitter, go to his Substack, or go to his GoFundMe, which you can also link to at his Substack as well. Alex, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, NFTs. I don't know what the market for NFTs is going to be like right now, given what's happening with crypto. But non-fungible tokens, you know, these like video clips
that you can buy for
auctioned off and so forth. Madonna has come out with three NFTs.
All right, what are they? Let's see if I want to purchase any.
Yeah, all right, let's run these by you. The first video, called Mother of Nature, features a naked digitized version of Madonna. We're not done. As she sits on an exam table in a lab and gives birth to a large tree.
Okay.
And then Sean Penn pops out of that tree.
Is it a spruce?
In the second clip, entitled Mother of Evolution, Mother of Nature, Mother of Evolution, a digitalized version of Madonna, once again nude, of course, sitting with her legs spread. I thought it was open your heart, not open your legs. Sitting with her legs spread on top of an old truck.
Okay.
Take a bow. In the third and final video, Mother of Technology, Madonna lying naked in the woods.
With her legs spread. No.
While metal centipedes crawl out of her genital area.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to dress you up in centipedes.
I'm going to pass, and pass.
Yeah. All right.
How much do you think that's going to go for?
Doesn't that look nice in the family room? You know, version of the, with the butterfly and the,
the tree
out of the.
Very large, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, how about this one with the metal centipedes?
I'm going to pass.
All right. Wanted to prize people looking, you know, to expand their artistic collection to these. And you know, they missed out on the Warhol auction.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This story in Entrepreneur Magazine about this couple that founded a genius school for future entrepreneurs, what reminded me, you know, in Illinois, with the Illinois Opportunity Scholarship Program.
But you helped start, right?
I was involved, yeah. How it works, right, so you've got the scholarships sort of that are standard up to $13,000, I think it is now. But then for kids who have special needs, as well as for kids who are gifted, who show, you know, special talent, special academic achievement, that doubles. And because of the particular nature of finding the right, the particular challenge of finding the right fit for a person with special needs, and you want to accommodate their special needs and get an IEP that works for them and for their family. Right. But then also, and this is sort of the forgotten piece of it, also for the kid that has like real high potential in some field of study, right? The gifted. I just thought it was interesting because it seems to be the approach that our next guests are taking in terms of developing talent, which K through 12 school systems, as a general rule, aren't really in the business of, it seems, from the actual outputs we're seeing, the actual quality of the education that students are able to earn, as we're seeing from test scores and aptitude skill sets. Simone and Malcolm Collins are the founders of the Collins Institute for the Gifted, and they join us now. Simone and Malcolm, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
We are so thrilled to be here with you guys. And, you know, the scope of what we're doing, I'd say it's so much bigger than really focusing on what we call gifted, which I think is different than what society calls gifted. We really focused on the I will of our students and not the IQ of the students, mm-hmm. at least when it comes to the admission cycle. But it's, we're trying to create a completely new way secondary education could work, middle school and high school education can work. Because, you know, when we look, when we think about our own kids, you know, growing up, it used to be a simple path. You know, you tell your kid, you make good grades, you get into a good college, and then you have a good job assured for you waiting at the end of it. And that's all, you know, smart financial decisions throughout. And now things have gotten so bad. Things have gotten so twisted. The whole educational system has become so focused on breeding ideological conformity more than bringing out the excellence in every student that we just felt compelled to try to start something new and rethink how the system could work.
Well, when you describe the current system as bizarrely authoritarian, your quote, explain what you mean by that.
Well, you know, it's funny. We talk about the fear of like, oh, wouldn't it be terrible living under a communist state where people controlled what you did all throughout a day. They assigned you to specific jobs. They watched you all the time. You needed a hall pass to use the restroom. It's like, well, that's what all of our kids are living with. And in the adult world, in our society, now it doesn't exactly work this way, but presumably when somebody can't be trusted to handle themselves, when they need some sort of a supervision, you know, we put them in jail. That's like what jail exists for. It's like this person is a danger to others in society, so we need to supervise them 24/7. We do that for all of the society before a certain age. And what our system says, what we really look at in the way we redeveloped our system is we said, well, I mean, how much freedom can we give sort of the higher echelons of kids, the top 20% of kids in sort of like personal responsibility? If we give them, if we build a system that acts as sort of a framework, a lattice for them to educate themselves and make these decisions themselves, how much further could they reach?
So how is go on.
Continue.
All right. Well, how does the Collins Institute for the Gifted work?
All right. So I'll explain sort of how the pedagogy works. So essentially, every day, a kid signs on to a portal or a platform. Within that platform, it lists all of the subjects that they are currently taking, you know, English, biology, et cetera. They can choose any of those subjects that they want to focus on at that time. When they click on it, it tells them what the next mastery level in that subject is that they will be tested on. So long division or something like that. And then it gives them recommendations on where they can learn that, whether it's Wikipedia or Khan Academy or YouTube videos. And it also gives them an opportunity to book time with a private tutor on that. The student then has complete control when they take the test, what subject they're studying at any time. However, when a student ignores a subject for a while, the system organically adapts and gives them more credits for tests than the subjects that they're further behind in. When a student gets way ahead in a subject, like 3 years ahead in a subject, we've been building out a network of high-tier sort of mentors to help students so that they can pitch what they're working on to these people, almost sort of like a guild system. So suppose you're 3 years ahead in biology. You get an opportunity to pitch a project in biology to like a senior person at the CDC or something like that. And this allows you as a student to begin, and on staff, you know, at the school, we have our own PR team and stuff like that, for you to begin to build your reputation in your field while you're still in high school. Because, you know, if we can't trust universities to get our kids jobs anymore, you know, we need to either train them to be entrepreneurs or train them to come out of schools as like known people in their fields. And I think kids are capable of it.
And that's what you observe, too, in this piece that I'm referencing that profiles this school that you started, the Collins Institute for the Gifted. The need to develop breakout talent across the board. Breakout talent is what's required. So mastery of an area is what's required in order to be successful in a more dynamic world.
Yeah, I mean, what we're producing now with the traditional industrial school system is a machine designed to create interchangeable cogs that originally were sort of meant for the British Imperial Empire, then corporate America. And that made sense with lifelong corporate jobs or government jobs, where what really mattered was that you weren't so terrible at something that it'd be easy to switch you out with someone else whenever that needed to happen. But our economy now is totally different. Jobs aren't guaranteed. We have to reinvent ourselves every 5 to 10 years. But people who are succeeding, who are thriving, are lumpy. They're terrible at some things. They're brilliant at others. And because everything's so globalized at this point and we have so much amazing tech, it doesn't matter. You can outsource anything you're not really good at. So what we really need from the modern schooling system is a system that creates the types of people who will thrive in modern society. And we're not even talking about social development, emotional development, psychological development, which also our school's really addressing. We think the public school's terrible at. We're really talking here just about the job market, but I think that's enough to really focus on.
Yeah, I mean, this system that's meant to turn students essentially into interchangeable cogs, it worked for this lifelong corporate job model, but those types of jobs are the first ones to be outsourced.
And automated.
They're the first ones to be automated. They are the most disposable type of cog you could produce or turn a kid into, and yet the whole system is geared around this.
Well, it's interesting, too, because both of you are high achievers academically in your academic career, and you're in the corporate world. I understand you helm TravelMax, which is a corporate wholesale travel agency. I read that in the article. So it's almost like the people who are on the inside, and you have a front row perspective on sort of what's wrong with the whole model.
Yeah, I mean, what's really wild is we've had the privilege of, through a variety of different channels, to be exposed to some of the world's top leaders, political and business and tech and academia and media. And we've noticed when it comes to everyone's backgrounds, no one talks about their schooling, the curriculum they had. It's all these experiences that they had that shaped them. And more importantly, their networks. It's who they know. And one thing we're trying to socially engineer with our school through the mentor program that Malcolm described is this advantage to people who wouldn't otherwise have an in, to give them the connections they need to begin to thrive and make a difference in the world.
To be specific, what she's referencing there is she used to be the managing director of Dialogue, which was a secret society founded by Peter Thiel for sort of people who are... Anyway, yes. So yeah. She really got an opportunity to see how people ended up in these senior positions of power throughout our society. And what she saw is that was not the path that the traditional school system was guiding our own kids down. So how could we ensure a good future for them?
So I guess from 0 to 1 is one of the must reads in your curriculum. Little Peter Thiel joke there. Yeah, it's a sort of
it's a real crowd pleaser.
Yeah, well, you know,
our audience at home is just my their faces off.
Yes, my arcane references and sense of humor. But what do you say to the parent that is still sort of beholden to the status of particular schools, whether they went there or not, the $50,000 a year preschool and the $60,000 a year K-8 school and so forth, the elite private schools in urban centers, Chicago, New York, L.A., and the like. What do you say to them about what's happening in those schools, which seems to me, from all the reading and reporting we've done, are more and more mirroring what's going on in the K-12 public systems?
Oh, it's alarming. And I actually, what we've seen, at least from the elite parents who really do care, is they're starting to back off. They're starting to take their kids out of school and world school them. But let's say that there's a parent who just thinks, my kid has to get into Harvard. For the past however many generations, my family's gone to Harvard. Well, we'd argue right now it's harder to get into elite universities, especially for certain types of students, than ever before. I don't care if they've banished standardized testing or not. It is getting very hard. And the only way to differentiate your way now is to basically be, and this is what we're trying to produce for those who want to stay in academia, world-class players in their respective fields. So just kind of like how with the college admissions scandal, you saw this engineering of like fake sports relationships, but we're trying to do the legitimate pathway of that. Like, all right, so let's say your kid's really into mushrooms and fungus. All right, let's have them at age 16 pitch that they co-author an article with the world's top mycologist and have them start doing research in the depths of the Amazon.
So you can still get that prestige.
Yeah.
But you know, when we talk about
But your private schools aren't going to do that. Yeah. Your public schools aren't going to do that. Lacrosse isn't cutting it anymore.
Well, and we've all seen what's happening within the private schools these days, even the elite private schools. The analogy I always use is the parasitoid, like one of these wasps that lays their eggs inside a worm, and you can see the parasites crawling inside of it, and it's about to split open. There's these mimetic viruses that are just toxic in our society, which have so overwhelmed the academic bureaucracy that it now is so focused on just replicating specific ideologies and not finding truth. And that's something that we're really focused on with our system. One of the partnerships we've been able to build, well, two of them, you know, one we've been able to build is with the University of Austin, and we love what they're doing in terms of, you know, splitting off from mainstream academia, and we hope to become a feeder school for them. But the other one we've been able to build is with Metaculus, which does prediction markets. And one of the reasons we're so excited about this is because it allows us to test when bias enters our own curriculum. And the way that we test that is whenever we have like a multiple choice test in something tied to civics or something like that, we add a few prediction-based questions about future events. Whenever the students who are accurately predicting future events are not the students who are getting good grades in a subject, we know that bias has crept into either the way we're judging the students or the way the system is teaching the students.
That's really interesting. And so is your institute for the gifted, is this accessible to middle income families?
So we're raising money for it right now. Basically, it depends on how much nonprofit money we're able to raise. It depends on its accessibility. But the whole system is structured in a way to be much, much lighter in terms of cost than the existing academic system. So, when you're going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, if we raise enough money, we would like to make this free to anyone who needs assistance. But yeah, like Malcolm said, I mean, the New York public school system gets about $30,000 per student annually. I mean,
right. And we could operate on much less than that.
Yeah, we don't have teachers unions. We don't have the same kind of bureaucracy that weighs down most traditional school systems. So with a lot less, we're able to do so much more.
And the system exists in two iterations, right? So we have the homeschool system, where parents are able to do this, and that would be dramatically lower cost and much more accessible. But, you know, with some parents, we talk to them and we're like, look, I don't have time I do not have the resources to have my kid at home all day. And so we had to create like a boarding iteration. And what we ended up doing with that is something similar to Minerva. And this isn't launched yet. It will be launching in 2 years. Where essentially we realized it was cheaper to just have kids traveling around the world as a group than it was to like buy a stationary location in the U.S. So they're able to interact with the same platform that the homeschooling kids are interacting with, but also get to experience all sorts of different cultures and at a lower cost than it costs to, you know, send someone through the New York public school system.
It's fascinating. I mean, I love the innovation. I'm looking forward to seeing how the Institute develops. Simone and Malcolm Collins, founders of the Collins Institute for the Gifted, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Fun talking with you.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thanks.
And they joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.